Chris, what day is today?
Today is, I don't fucking know. Today's the 27th, Sunday.
Okay, so it's March 27th, 2016. This is the Untitled Movie Podcast. He is Chris Wetman. I'm Mark Nixon. We have a special guest that will be showing up on the very second episode of the Untitled Movie Podcast that you can listen to on morelikeradio.com. So check them out, obviously. That's the whole reason why you're even here in the first place. But we start off, Chris, I want to apologize because I fucked up your name.
You should apologize.
For
something that I didn't even notice.
Well, if you listen to the first podcast, it sounded like I was 4 or 5 Jack Daniel shots in. So it's true, Mark Nixon. So there's apology for that. Number two, and this is actually very, very important, and you know, you can look up anything on the internet and find thousands upon thousands of podcasts and people with opinions about movies and all that sort of thing, and the question that we had answered for our first podcast, but it unfortunately does not exist because the sound sucked, and so we will answer it again for the audience, and that is, why should anybody really give a fuck about our opinions? And I counter by saying that, Chris, what is your background as far as movie knowledge and expertise working around movies and film and all that type of thing?
Well, I'm from Florida, just like you are, so I've never really been in the movie industry, but you and I both worked at the movie theater. You and I both worked at Blockbuster Video. I grew up with two parents that love movies, grew up going to Farmore and renting 6 movies for $2 every weekend or
holy
whatever it was.
Shit, Farmore.
You remember Farmore?
Oh, I remember Farmore.
And this was back when you had to take the cover box up to the counter so that they could exchange it for the video cassette that was behind the counter, right? Remember
right.
that?
Yes.
There's like rows and rows of video cassettes behind the counter.
Right.
So if the cover box wasn't there, then you couldn't even see it.
Right.
So we did that for, you know, every weekend for years and years. And, you know, I mean, I just really love movies, have always, you know, that's sort of my go-to. If I'm not doing anything, I pop a movie in. I don't really watch TV that much. You know, I got strong opinions. Because I love movies, I like to see everything.
Okay.
The big stuff, the little stuff. I'm not very discerning. I was literally watching the Vacation remake before I came over here.
We saw that last night.
It's funny.
It is very funny.
I laughed.
We can talk about that later on, as a matter of fact. That's very coincidental. But approximate. How many movies have you seen in your lifetime?
Oh, for God's sake, I have no idea. I have no idea. Like, I wouldn't know how to... I don't even know how many movies there are.
Take a wild guess.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or how many movies do you usually see in a year?
In a year. Yeah. I mean, in a year, I see basically, you know, I would say 85% of what comes out. And I'm guessing. That's off the top of my head. Between
okay.
And most of that is on disc these days, on Netflix or, you know, streaming. Or I do still get the discs through
right.
the mail. That's how nerdy I am. I still want my Netflix disc mailed to me every week.
Right.
I probably see 80, 85% of what comes out every year. I go to the movies and I get them, you know, streaming or on disc.
Okay. And you used to work at AMC Merchants Walk 10.
True that. You and I both worked there.
Yep. Right. And
projectionists, ushers, ticket takers.
Holy shit. Yeah, that's that was for at least 6 or 7 years.
It was 20 years ago. Yeah, we worked there for 6 or 7 years. I left before you did under, you know,
duress.
Under duress.
Right.
Under special circumstances.
And then I left under special circumstances because I hated the guy that made you leave under special circumstances.
True that.
And then you worked at Blockbuster Video.
Yep. I actually worked at both at the same time for a while, so that tells you about something about someone, you know. Like, I wanted to work at the movie theater and at Blockbuster Video. And I was literally seeing everything that came out and
right.
renting everything that came to the video store. You
right, because you get 5 rentals a week,
yeah.
and you can pick whatever you want. And obviously, you didn't count games before they just started renting out games and everything. And so
right.
you could pick out VHS, you could pick out DVD,
right.
Blu-ray when it eventually decided to, you know, rear its head.
Yes, and if you're watching movies at that rate, it's only a matter of time before you sort of feel like you owe it to yourself to go back and watch all those movies that you've never seen.
Right.
AFI puts out the list of the 100 best movies ever made. You sort of feel obligated. Like, if you want to call yourself a movie fan or a movie, you know, nut or fanatic or whatever,
yeah.
you just sort of feel obligated to go watch something like The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, which you wouldn't necessarily see as a guy who was born in 1980, but you feel like, everybody talks about it as a classic. I should probably see it.
Right.
So you use that as one of your 6 rentals.
Right.
You know,
and the fact that you even know that movie title and you know that Humphrey Bogart stars in it
is
you know, very astute as opposed to the general moviegoer that, oh, the Humphrey Bogart guy, wasn't he in right. the Maltese Falcon?
Right. Well, you obviously know that too, and you know, if you have not seen it, I just picked that movie out of a hat, but it's an awesome movie. Humphrey Bogart in rare villain form.
So, pretty awesome. What would you say out of the 100 movies that are listed on the AFI Top 100 movies you've seen? 70, 80 of them?
Yeah, I think I've probably seen 80, again, like 80, I would say 85% of them. There's okay. some, there's definitely some on there that I've never gotten around to seeing.
Okay.
But I remember when that list came out, I sort of made it a point to start chipping away at it.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. And so, clearly we have an established background that we love movies, we care about movies.
Yep.
You don't want to watch shitty movies, or no. at least when we do see shitty movies, they're either by accident or we're deliberately watching them just so that we can talk about them, and so...
Yeah. I never go into a movie hoping it will suck, and this will probably come into play in our conversation later. Like, if I go see a movie, I am hoping that it is good, truly. So, it doesn't matter what movie it is. If it's a superhero movie or some, you know, some soft British porn, then it doesn't matter. I want it to be good.
Right. So, let's get into it, because the movie that we were talking about last week, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, came out Thursday night, mm-hmm. Was playing all this weekend, Easter weekend, yeah. I might add, which is not coincidental, but varying opinions as far as how everybody thought it was going to do, whether there was going to be a good movie or not. Let's start off by... asking you what you thought of it.
What did I think of it?
Yes.
Okay, so the quick version. So like I said, any movie I go see, like I want it to be good. I'm a fan of Zack Snyder. Like I've pretty much liked just about everything he's made. I like Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
I like 300 well enough. I liked Watchmen very much.
Okay.
And I liked Man of Steel. You know, well enough. Like, I'm not nuts about any of those movies. But, so I was going into this hoping, that it would be good. The early reviews were, you know, kind of...
mixed?
Well, if we're being kind, we can say mixed.
They
weren't terribly mixed, actually.
Well, no, they weren't at all. And we can actually get into that, too, because I have some things that are pulled up. But anyway, so they were mixed. There's obviously some contention as far as whether or not right. it's going to be a good movie or not. So
I didn't read any of the reviews. I basically read the Rotten Tomatoes caption of the review. That's kind of what I do, because I don't want to get into spoilers
right.
Before I see a movie. Bottom line, you know... I thought it was weak only because I didn't think it was terribly creative. I thought that it was sort of banging on the same key the whole movie. I think the tone of the movie is somber to a fault. I do think it is joyless. It is, you know, and by the way, for anyone listening, we are almost certainly going to get into spoilers in this conversation.
Yeah, please don't listen to this show.
You can't have a conversation, especially among people who liked and disliked a movie, and not get into spoilers. So
yeah.
I would like anyone to listen, but don't listen if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want spoilers.
Yeah.
So you can't have, you know, take the scene where, you know, they blow up Congress, for instance. You know,
okay.
In a movie with a little bit more levity, in a movie where the tone is not so somber all the time, that scene would be more powerful. But you, at that point, you've already sat through an hour and a half of just, like, grimacing and teeth grinding and dark, dank atmosphere that's just, like, beating you over the head. So by the time a scene like that comes around, it's just, you just sort of shrug it off like, yeah, they blew up Congress, you know, like, has no meaning. It doesn't mean, and that's sort of, that moment sort of was how I felt about the whole movie. It's like, there was no change in mood, there was not even a joke here and there, literally, like, I think... one small joke comes extremely late in the movie, probably like 4/5 into the movie, if not more.
Okay.
When Superman's mom says, you know, Batman says, oh, I'm friends with your son. Superman's mom says, the cape gave it away, or something like that.
Okay.
It's literally like the first joke in the movie.
Yeah.
So I thought the movie had some scenes that came close to working. I think it had some moments that came close to working, but... all told, it's not something that stayed with me. It's not something I thought about again, other than the fact that I knew I was going to talk to you about it.
Right.
It's not something I'm certain I won't see it again unless it just happens to be on cable.
Anything that you liked?
No, I mean, there were things that, like, sort of came close to working. But
okay.
I feel like the mood and the atmosphere of the movie just kept them from working. It felt like there was good scenes coming up, felt like there was good scenes starting, you know. I think a lot of people that saw the movie felt like the Wonder Woman character coming in sort of felt like it was going to break things up a little bit. And then how does the movie end? It ends exactly the same way that the first one ends, with like a 40-minute city-wide destruction scene of two flying, in this case, you know, essentially four,
right,
but flying beings just beating the shit out of each other, you know, like it's just like destruction to the point where it's numbing at the end of the movie. It's like, this is what they did, like they literally ended this movie the same way they ended the first movie, you know, just 30-40 minutes of balls to the wall action, which just doesn't do it for me anymore. I don't know how you feel about it, but it just doesn't do it for me anymore.
I have my well, first of all, but before I get into the opinion about the actual movie, so there was something that I had commented on that was extremely hilarious, all things considered, from what we were talking about last week, and that is, you know, we were talking about how there's been countless amounts of trailers and clips and behind the scenes different takes of the movie.
Yes.
So more so than most movies would ever, you know, even dream of. And so we're sitting there, I'm sitting there with my friend and her husband and the kid and everything else, and we're watching the movies, we're watching the trailers, Warcraft comes on, X-Men Apocalypse comes on,
yep,
and then guess what the next trailer was? What? It was Batman versus Superman. And everybody in the theater went, what? Because it's the fight scene that Bruce Wayne kicks in trying to save Martha, Martha Clark, or Martha Kent, excuse me, and I'm laughing at myself. I'm like, of course they would. Of course they would put the trailer before the fucking movie.
Whoa, so even somebody made a mistake, basically.
Oh, well, they did. As it turns out, because they're the digital prints now, so thankfully they didn't have to, you know, cut and splice everything back together again,
right,
like we used to have to do.
Yeah.
Right. Someone put on the wrong movie. They put on Allegiant. But I thought it was really funny with the conversation that we had last week that literally playing the trailer to the trailer.
That is funny. Yeah. Like, oh, you're about to see this movie? Just one more time. Here's the preview.
Yeah.
So the lights turn off and they're like, hey, sorry, we put the wrong movie on?
No. In fact, no one came down. No one said anything. They literally had a minute and a half of a gap and then they put the movie on. And so we started watching Batman vs. Superman and they started clapping because all people are sarcastic assholes and everything else. So
from
the very get-go, slow motion for me.
Yeah.
Slow motion for me, Chris.
The whole credit sequence is in slow motion. The entire opening credit sequence is in slow motion.
I know that we have to have gravitas and we have to have symbolism and all that sort of thing, but man, Zack Snyder really lays it on thick.
Yeah. Stylistically, it's overkill with the slow-mo.
Yeah.
It's not just the credit sequence, either.
Well, no, it's not. And it's throughout, too. I mean, not even the intro, during, and then the ending where I thought it was going to end five or six times, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King style, but it just kept on going.
Right.
And when you've got the 21 gun salute, and even the casings are falling down ever so gently onto the ground.
Right.
Like, all right, I get it. And then he's floating over this couple that's sitting on top of a roof, and they're being saved by a flood, which I'm pretty sure was in the first Man of Steel movie. I'm pretty sure that, like, something to those lines.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
So, all right, so that kind of annoyed me, but I'm trying to be open-minded, I'm trying to be optimistic, I'm like, maybe it's not going to be as bad as I thought. Ben Affleck was good. I thought he was a good Batman.
Yeah.
I thought he was serviceable. I thought he was going to be the worst part about it, actually, because, I don't know, to me, you could really fuck up Batman. I mean, if you're not too careful, you could either make him into something that he's clearly not, and he does do a couple things in the movie that are kind of weird. Like,
yeah.
I always thought Batman didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
Even when the Joker was, you know, killing all these Robins and paralyzing Commissioner Gordon's daughter and, you know, all this other crap, he would never kill him. But I didn't think that he was branding these people to be sent to prison and then they get killed later on, and he has full knowledge of that. He's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
So that was weird.
That didn't bother me so much. I've heard a lot of scuttlebutt about that, and that doesn't bother me so much.
Like, right.
And those things, you can't blame that on Affleck either. Like, I agree with you. I thought Affleck was certainly serviceable as Batman, and as Bruce Wayne, I felt like we just didn't get enough time to see him at the party, Lex Luthor's sort of book party, whatever the fuck that was, like a party about books. Like, why did they keep mentioning that it was about books? Was that important? I don't know. But at that party, you got a little glimpse of him playing Bruce Wayne, and I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, he was really charming. He was talking with Clark Kent. He was talking with whoever Wonder Woman's alter ego is, and so that was really cool. The story kept jumping around way too much, to the point where if I've got to go back and look up on Wikipedia for the movie page description of the plot just to clarify, okay, maybe I missed something. I'm dumb. I'm very, very stupid. Right. And even the Wikipedia description is jumping back and forth. You know there's problems.
It's extremely convoluted. It's, like, unnecessarily so.
Right. Yes. And that's... Maybe that's the ignorance that I admittedly have when When it comes to comic book lore and storylines and things that I'm not aware of where, you know, you've got this whole thing that's being set up for Justice League and you've got Cyborg and Flash and Aquaman and Wonder Woman that are all coming down the pike and they're all going to be part of this whole thing. Certain liberties have to be taken. Again, like we were talking last week with, hey, monkeys can't be swinging around with Shia LaBeouf, but I totally believe some guy getting his heart ripped out by a voodoo priest.
Right.
By same token, Batman can have a vision with somebody time traveling through the fabric of space to let him know, like, hey, don't kill this guy because he's going to be very, very important for you.
Right.
Okay, I get it.
Was that Flash, by the way? Is that who that was supposed to be?
Yes, because I actually looked it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, that was the one thing that I was like, who the fuck was that? I assume that because it looks like the kid Ezra Miller or whatever, but I wasn't so sure.
Right.
Yeah, the movie's so needlessly convoluted all over the place. And by the way, two major fucking, oh, that was just a dream moments. Yeah. Two of them.
Yeah.
Like, ridiculous. You do that once in a movie and the audience groans. You do it twice and it's like, okay. Are you actually going to have a sequence that I'm interested in? Or is it only going to be a dream sequence every time that happens? That's sort of how I felt after the second dream sequence.
My second gripe was, and you touched on it earlier, is the action. And the action where... The first time that I saw the Transformers movie in the movie theater, it's like someone is taking their fingers and just going like this. I can't follow it at all. I mean, I guess I'm old. I'm an old guy.
No. I felt the same way, and I've heard other people make the same complaints. A good director, and I think he is a good director. He's just doing this in a way that is confusing. A good director, you understand where you're at in the geography of the scene.
Right.
And there's so much geography taking place, I guess, that you just can't. You can't keep up. They're throwing each other from building to building, from one city to another city, and all this kind of stuff.
Well, no, I'm not even talking... Well, I mean, that too, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about where the Batmobile is chasing after the truck that has the kryptonite that he's trying to steal from Lex Luthor. Even that was all over the place, but... He slowed down for very poignant scenes of him, you know, jumping over this ramp or blowing shit up or all this other stuff.
Or when he's drifting past Superman so that their eyes can meet in an extremely homoerotic slow-mo way. Yeah.
Super hot. But, you know, if he would have taken the slow-mo and all the quick scenes and just kind of found an even keel, I think it probably would have been all right. I mean, the Batmobile, from what I remember, was all right. I mean, it was pretty cool. It had, you know, Gatling guns and all that.
But you didn't really get to see it, you know? Like, you didn't really get to admire some of the production design that I'm sure happened. Things were so dark and jumbly, and it's weird. In slow motion, you should think that you'd be able to see things better, but you couldn't. Like, there was just no opportunity to appreciate it.
Right. And my last gripe, and then I will say one good thing about the movie, but my gripe with Jesse Eisenberg playing Lex Luthor was he was so annoying. So annoying.
Yeah.
And I think... I don't know whether he saw The Dark Knight beforehand, saw Heath Ledger, saw how twitchy and all that, you know, like his mannerisms and all that sort of thing. I always thought that Lex Luthor was supposed to be some, you know, calculated, measured businessman. You know, he's got LexCorp and hundreds of billions of dollars at his disposal. He's not a Joker ripoff.
Yeah. Was it explained, his motivation? Was his motivation explained? Because if it was, I missed it. And I don't think I left to take a pee. I think I just reached down and cracked open a new beer. That was the only time I took my eyes off the screen. But was his motivation explained? And by the way, we are going to be talking to somebody in a little bit who
loved the movie.
Loved the movie and has some different opinions about it. Maybe he can shed some light on this. But I felt like about 5 minutes into his performance, which I also did find a little grating, I'm thinking... Why is he doing this? Like, why is he so angry? Like, I heard the sort of God thing that he explains at the end, but that still didn't feel like enough to me. That didn't feel like enough of an explanation for all of this, you know, for like sending people to another country and like, you know, SWAT teams and all this like black ops teams and stuff to steal this shit and bring it back. And
aside from the previous information that I know from other Superman movies and comics,
I think
that I know,
throw all that stuff out, right? Because this is a whole different character. This is like a whole different guy.
Well, he acted like a completely different character from the Lex Luthor that I was.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Daddy issues? I don't know. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm literally trying to show.
I'm truly asking too. Like, and I get it. Like, that's what you gotta sort of throw your hands up and go, I guess he's got daddy issues, because to me it wasn't explained.
Yeah.
Like, he does give a little bit of a speech at the end about how he felt about, you know, God and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Which is obviously making a correlation between God and Superman. But that's pretty flimsy. That doesn't feel like enough to me to explain everything that he was doing. I agree with you. I thought that the choice to cast Eisenberg was interesting, but I feel like he delivered every single line in this sort of sing-songy, twitchy way, you know, snapping his fingers and moonwalking across the room
And feeding Jolly Ranchers to senators?
Yeah, feeding Jolly Ranchers to senators. Yeah. It just didn't come off like villainous. And that's one of the things that the movie sort of lacks, you know?
Yeah.
It lacks a strong villain.
Right. Well, and again, my positive about the movie, and it's kind of as a whole, but Ben Affleck was awesome as Batman, in my opinion.
Gave us a good Superman.
Yeah.
He's fun.
I wanted more of Wonder Woman.
Yes.
I remember one spot when they were all fighting Doomsday, and she had the smirk on her face, and I thought, that finally, we're gonna have some levity broken.
We're going to have some fun.
Yeah. The last fight when Batman is fighting all the guys that have Martha Kent in the warehouse.
Yeah, the Black Ops team.
Beating the shit out of every single one. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And just in general, we're so lucky. I mean, honestly, like, we have this $250 million movie that has been made.
Yeah.
Whereas before, in the 70s and 80s and 90s, I mean, not the 80s to a certain degree, but to the 70s especially, when they had the same comic book movies and people still wanted to make movies, and they looked all like shit.
Yeah.
Like, there was no production value at all. You couldn't get anybody to look even a tenth of what they look like in the comic books.
Yep.
And so we're very spoiled that we're complaining about it. But because fair is fair, and because, you know, we obviously have opinions about the movie that are not, you know, favorable, we wanted to make sure that we gave props where props are due to our friend Daniel Ballard, who is wanting to explain his like about the movie and maybe things that he didn't like. I don't know. Or maybe things that we're kind of confused on and he can explain, because he knows about comic book movies and comic books in general more than we do. So.
Yeah. Well, hey guys. Yep. I fucking love the movie. I'm just going to put it out there. I think a lot of what we're going to talk about here is just kind of differences in personal taste, but also in just the way we enjoy movies. I sat down. First of all, I'll tell you how I saw it. I saw it this morning for the first time, and I think this might be one of those movies that will certainly benefit from a second viewing. Just to be clear, you're talking about the plot and how it was convoluted and jumped around a lot. I think if you really sat and you watched it again, you might have a different experience, but, you know, I really don't know. The first Superman, I felt that way, Man of Steel. I hated it the first time I saw it. I saw it a second time in 3D when I wasn't exhausted at 2 in the morning, and I loved every second of it. This movie, I love from the first scene. I don't have a problem with slow-mo. I don't have that problem at all. I enjoy Snyder's directorial vision. All of his movies have lots of slow-mo in them. I expected it. I was fully aware that I was going to see lots of slow-mo, and honestly, I appreciated it, because seeing these two characters on screen together for the first time in my life, something I've wanted forever, I don't mind taking an extra second or two or ten to relish in that. It's beautiful. It's breathtaking. It's something that makes every kid excited, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm okay with slow-mo. Some of it, yeah, okay, a little overdone. I'm not going to deny that some of it is unnecessary, but by and large, I can't think of a single moment where I thought, man, this slow-mo is killing me, like you guys.
What are your thoughts about Jesse Eisenberg playing Lex Luthor?
Sure, okay, yeah. So I think Luthor, as a whole, didn't have a very strong arc. You know, there's no real character development. He's just the same character from beginning to end. He just gets a little more manic, a little more psychotic, perhaps, towards the end. I think really what it is, and he even touches on, he talks about his dad and daddy issues. You hit it right on the nose. He made it very clear his dad beat the shit out of him. He's a spoiled rich kid, you know, probably was bullied to hell. And he's got all his money. He's got all his power. So what does someone who's kind of sick in the head from all that abuse do with it? You know, he abuses the fuck out of it. He goes crazy. And what bigger way, what more grand way can you challenge all that power and try to prove yourself than by taking on God? Or Batman, for that matter. Because from what I understand, he really wanted Batman dead. Which was interesting because he's traditionally Superman's nemesis, not Batman's. And then he's playing each them against each other. But Jesse Eisenberg, sorry, back to that. Jesse Eisenberg played this psychotic character who you only see glimpses of in the beginning. And slowly comes out towards the end. He fucking murders the senator. And he does it in a very sadistic way. He makes her drink piss first. And then he uses this amputee to blow up a whole building. So he's clearly a sick and twisted crazy person, and that's the twitchiness. I can see where you guys might see a little Heath channeling there. I just saw him more as a neurotic. You know, I saw him as, honestly, Zuckerberg. You know, he's twitchy such a Zuckerberg in this, and that's, I think, something to be said. It's the entitlement generation. It's you know, everyone gets a trophy generation. I think it's something about that they're trying to speak to here. And he's still just a kid. He's a kid in his daddy's house. He's a kid in his daddy's company. And he's got all this power. They never explain what happens to his dad. My bet is he freaking killed him. And to me, Jesse wasn't as strong as he could have been, but he was a great choice. And when I compare him to the other Luthers that I've seen, and then I compare them to the comics or the animated series, I don't have a problem with something different. Hackman, a lot of people think he's the end-all, be-all, but in my opinion, Hackman was still kind of a lampoon of the character. And like you were saying, Mark, he's a savvy businessman. He's a genius, and he's calculated, and, you know, he's impressive. He's just as impressive as Superman, except on the other end of the spectrum.
Right.
I don't think that Eisenberg quite pulled that off, but I also don't think that's necessarily his. That's on him. That might be the script, really, because he wasn't given a lot to do. He was more of the ploy throughout the whole thing. He's just orchestrating things, and that's part of, I think, the jumping around that we're talking about. You know, the plot, because it really wasn't that complicated. It was Lex Luthor setting this up, and there's little hints here and there that he's the one setting it up. I mean, I think we all knew that because we read stuff beforehand. But there's, you know, just back and forth, quick little cut scenes, little scenes with the senator, setting that up. All these different little setups going on. Batman, you have a lot to cover here. I mean, we have a lot. We got Batman. We got to get a little of his backstory in there. I think that might have been unnecessary, but I appreciated that they did that, honestly. I went into it thinking, this is a Man of Steel sequel. Then remembered, oh, they told me it wasn't a sequel. So, I don't know. You know,
well, those are fair points. As much as we complain about the story being convoluted, I mean, it really is. Okay, so it's literally called Batman versus Superman, and that is the plot of the movie, and
yeah,
you know, how we get to that point. So I get it. Now, let me ask you this. You say that you're a fan of Zack Snyder's. Chris said it as well. I don't know any more about this movie, what my opinion of it is. And, of course, I'm complaining about the thing that he's known for since 300 and Watchmen and everything else, so dummy on me. But do you think he should be directing Justice League moving forward? I don't even know if that's even.
I don't know if he is or not.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
So
I don't know that they've announced it. I think if anything, they have announced that he is doing part one, But I can't imagine he would do part one without doing part two. However, that's possible.
Well, like doing it with Star Wars. Not him, yeah. But, you know, same type thing.
But I do think I heard that he is doing part one, and then he's just going to be producing after that.
He is, according to
IMDb. I know
he's
producing Wonder Woman and Aquaman. He's a main producer for those two movies.
Now that we're talking about the Justice League, let me get into something else that I feel about this movie, because the comparisons to Marvel are hard to avoid at this point. Only because, I mean, it's DC versus Marvel. Even before they were making movies, you know, everyone that read comic books compared DC to Marvel. It happened all the time. Now, Marvel has really built, you know, like an empire. They've made 30-something movies, you know, between Fox's Marvel and Sony's Marvel and Marvel's Marvel. Now DC's trying to get in the game. Ironically, we talked about it last week, DC, before they really tried to get into the game, has made, you know, a couple of the best comic book movies ever made, if not the best comic book movie ever made, with The Dark Knight and Batman Begins.
Right.
So, but now they're going full bore and they're trying to get into it. And this is one of the things that's bothered me about Batman vs. Superman from the marketing, from the time the marketing got going. And this idea that it was going to incorporate Justice League characters and all this type of stuff. It feels to me like it's like Marvel did a really good job of earning it. Whether you like those movies or not, if the Avengers worked for you, it's probably because they spent a lot of time and money, but did a really good job of establishing Iron Man, establishing Captain America, establishing the Hulk, establishing all these characters, Thor, and then they sort of bring them all together and lace it all up with one kick-ass movie with the Avengers. Whether you liked it or not, if it worked for you, that's probably a good way, you know, a good reason why it worked, because they did all the footwork and then they bring it all together. Now, DC, it's obvious that the Justice League has existed before Marvel ever did that with their movies. But DC is now trying to do essentially the same thing with their movie brand. And I feel like they're going about it kind of backwards. I feel like this movie was an attempt to sort of, like, prime the waters for, you know, the upcoming Justice League movie. And I feel like it's not earned. Like, you really got the Man of Steel, and then you've got the other Batman movies, but we're throwing those out, and we're starting sort of fresh with Batman here. And then, they have this scene in the movie, and again, major spoilers, but they have this scene where they sort of uncover Lex Luthor's sort of, you know, file on these other characters.
It's meta-human research, yeah.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting, because you do get kind of a oh shit moment when you're watching it. But to me, it felt like it was just, it wasn't earned, you know? And also, it was a little bit silly, because you got the camera footage of the Flash, and it's like, okay, yeah, that seems like something that would be in a file somewhere. And then you get the picture of Wonder Woman. And then you get to you get to the other two. What's his name? Aquaman. It's literally like underwater footage of him, like, sort of poking his head out of a ship hole, like, sort of looking around. And it's like, whoa, where the fuck did this footage come from?
Right.
I feel like we could, like, re-examine this one. Too. The other ones were sort of happenstance. I feel like we could probably find this fish man again, you know?
Daniel, I'll let you respond.
Well, I think those were certainly added towards, you know, the middle of the production. They said, all right, we're going to, you know, I think it's clear that when they started this thing, they were like, all right, well, we got to balls to the wall, this thing here, and we got to make this work. And so they're cramming a lot in there, but they didn't. I thought if they had gone any more into any of those other characters, it really would have tanked. But as far as introducing those characters, but the way they did it was kind of subtle. It was more about, you know, Diana or Wonder Woman, and then she sees these other files and she checks those out too. And it's just a cap nod, you know, it's to the fans, because my mother, I love her. She and I talk about movies at least once a week, because she goes to the movies and sees one or two movies every weekend. And I asked her what she thought about it. She didn't even know who Wonder Woman was. So the whole movie, she left the movie, she didn't even know who that character was.
Wait, she didn't know who Wonder Woman was, or she didn't know that character was supposed to be Wonder Woman?
She didn't know that character was supposed to be Wonder Woman. She knows who Wonder Woman was.
Right.
Wonder Woman's been around a long time. So, but she's not a comic book person, but she's a movie person, and she said she enjoyed it, but she didn't know who that character was. I doubt she knew what Flash was. I think a lot of these are very much a lot of these inclusions were really for the hardcore fans, for the people who truly, truly love their comic books and love their the comic book lore and everything, and who really kind of it's an extra, it's a bonus. Instead of doing their after credit scene, they gave us this. And they could have done it at the end of the credits, and people would have thought, oh, hell yeah, fucking hey, that's awesome. But they did it in the middle of the movie, and so it was a little,
well,
you know, a
Wonder
little
Woman?
Different.
What, let's
same
talk
thing
about
with
Wonder
that
Woman.
Omega scene, you know, that desert scene with Batman, that dream sequence, that could have been an after credits thing too, but, you know, they threw that in the movie.
Yeah.
But I felt the same way about Aquaman. I thought, one of the things I thought was, man, I hope they figure that out before they make that movie, because,
yeah,
yeah, I mean, he's underwater, and he, you know, he's moving around underwater, yeah, but he looked very uncomfortable. And
you could literally see him holding his breath, like there was a bubble about to come out of his mouth, you know?
Yeah, it looked really strange.
Yeah.
And the Cyborg one I thought was very strange. I did like, though, that the doctor who's putting Cyborg together was
Joe Morton.
Miles Dyson
from
Terminator
2. Yep.
And he was also a reoccurring character on Smallville TV show.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I'd have to look it up, I wonder if it's the same character. That's because they were both doctors.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Well, let's go back to Wonder Woman for a second. Because talking about Earned It, and you said you thought some of the stuff they did was subtle. And some of the stuff they did do was subtle. But Wonder Woman. So it's obvious that this character, and I don't know much about comic books, so I honestly didn't even know that Wonder Woman had been around since 1918 or before. Or what, I really don't know much about the Wonder Woman mythology. But this movie presents that information to you. So it's obvious that she's at least been on Earth or aware of Earth or visiting Earth since 1918. And she's been sort of out of it since then. She's like, she's not involved, she's staying out of it, she's... The lasso is in a invisible suitcase somewhere, and she's not getting involved. And then she sort of runs into Bruce Wayne because she's trying to find this picture and sort of aware of Superman. She obviously knows what's going on. And then she's getting on a plane, and turns out there's a fight going on. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she just decides,
I'm getting off this plane.
You know what? Fuck it. I'm getting off this plane. I'm Wonder Woman again. I'm putting the
lasso on.
I'm putting the lasso and the gold panties on, and I'm getting out there and kicking ass. And I'm glad she did, because, as I said earlier, I thought that actually breathed a little bit of life into what was, you know, prior to that, a little bit dull for me. But I just felt like, I don't know, again, what's the motivation for this character? I don't understand it. I don't understand why all of a sudden now she's getting into it again.
And I think I can agree. I can agree with you there. I do think that they definitely explained it very subtly. She's looking for a picture. She doesn't want to be outed. Luther's looking into her. She knows this, so she comes looking after it. And she wants to protect herself and her people, you know. And so it's kind of a throwaway, because as a character she's almost just a prop, you know. But again, talking about how they're doing it backwards from Marvel, this is a setup. And it's intentionally a setup for the Justice League. And maybe we don't like how they did it. Maybe it wasn't done exactly the way we wanted it to be done, but it was. They did it. They set it up. We're going to come, we're going to see a Wonder Woman movie here in, like, what, a year?
Something
year
like
and
that.
A half or something.
Yeah.
We'll get an Aquaman movie, and then we'll get Justice League Part 1. Or maybe it's Justice League Part 1 and then Aquaman.
Hey, here's my opinion on it, and Chris touched on it earlier, and that is this, is that, you know, there's 36 Marvel movies that have been released up to this point.
I saw
right.
an infographic.
And the majority of them are interconnected simply because of the fact that, you know, the Marvel studios found their groove and have been able to weave all these. You know, that's really the whole reason why they get these specific directors to work on these movies, is that you have to carry the story going. You have to have it go this trajectory. You can't deviate from plot line to plot line. And so what I would almost liken it to is, you know, this particular movie would be, you know, like DC movies in general would be like, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Chris, where, you know, we got to start over every 3 years because we fucked up and picked a wrong quarterback, or we picked the wrong coach, or we drafted incorrectly, or, you know, we got to start over and try to cram as much stuff as in as possible because we're trying to catch up to the New England Patriots of the world, to the more established franchises and all that type of thing. So,
That's exactly right. When I saw this movie, that's a perfect analogy, because it feels like the only person in this movie I know is Henry Cavill from Superman. Now, I know who Batman is. Chris Whetton from Lakeland, Florida knows who Batman is.
Right.
But this movie is starting a new mythology, essentially. The only mythology that exists in this world prior to this movie is Superman. And everything else, as you said, they didn't have to do the Batman origin story, but they did. They gave us a little piece of that. That's what I needed. And maybe I'm jumping the gun. Maybe that's for Justice League, but I think getting into it like that, if you're going to do it, you got to do it. Like, give me the story on Wonder Woman. Give me more than what you gave me, because otherwise, as you said, she feels like a prop. And that is an apt way to describe her. She was very much a prop. And then these other characters, I don't know what that is. Maybe it is, like you say, a tip of the hat to the comic book fans, but I'm not a comic book fan, and I'm in the theater going, what the fuck am I watching? Like, what is this? You know, like, let's get it together here, because it feels incoherent, you know? As I said, I like Man of Steel. I liked it very much. I was like you. And as a matter of fact, I'll go one further. I don't care for the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. I don't care for them at all. I'm not precious about them. I didn't watch them really growing up.
Right.
I have seen them, but I think that the Man of Steel is better. It's a more entertaining movie.
Yeah.
I think those movies, you go back, like you were talking about, movies of the 80s and the 70s, like, they just didn't have the means of making a truly epic action movie. You go back and watch it, and it's silly, you know? It's like, I can see the strings, you know, holding him up as he's flying.
Right, or Christopher Reeve is flying, but he's flying very, very gently as he takes a jump off of the podium, so that, you know, I want to see Superman flying faster than a speeding bullet. That's cool to me, so.
Yeah, it has to be said that the effects in this movie, in Batman versus Superman, they're, you know, like, effects, and I think that's kind of what you're talking about. We live in this time, and it's like, we take it for granted now, because the effects in this movie are so good that you don't even notice them. Like, the movie's so incredible looking, you know?
I'm going to jump in there about the effects. That last fight scene, to me, was just glorious. Everything about it was glorious. And you were talking earlier about how it ended just like the first one, and I kind of had a disagreement with you there, because in the first one, you know, the fight is actually destroying a third of Metropolis, right? Killing all these people. And then they, you know, got a lot of shit for it. And so they take it outside and abandoned warehouses and whatever. There's even a line about it. Wonder Woman asked Batman, why'd you take him back to the city? And he said, oh, this place is abandoned or whatever. And
it's after 5 o'clock. Everyone's gone. It's uninhabited.
It's Easter Sunday.
And so, and while that scene was freaking amazing to me, I did feel like it was a lot starker, it looked like an alien planet, because by 2 minutes into it, everything's on fire and crumbles, you know, so it they might as well be, I mean, they were on a green screen, it was probably all computers, but it didn't have the realistic punch that knocking down buildings in Metropolis did, or New York or whatnot.
Didn't have an actor like Michael Shannon either.
In Man of Steel. And so they took some notes, I think, and they thought, well, let's keep this lighter and not have as many humans dying as a result of these beings fighting. And that was also there was an underscore of that as well. The whole movie is just very somber and depressing, and I don't mind that. It is depressing. I mean, I'm looking at this through Superman's eyes, and he's just found out, you know, 18 months before this movie, he's an alien. You know, he's from another planet. He's answered, is there life out there? And he's coming to terms with that, and the first thing he has to do is kill every single member of his race. And Superman doesn't kill either, by the way. Batman's not supposed to kill, and Superman's not supposed to kill, and clearly they're both killers. And that's just the world that these movies are in now, and I'm okay with that. I think that it's modern, it's more realistic than comic books, but...
Now, that is a fair point. That is a very fair point that, you know, you can't live in this idealistic time when the original comics were written, you know, because Bob Kane wrote Batman in the 1930s and Superman was written in the similar time frame. So I will say this, though, in regards to that last fight with Doomsday, I didn't know fuck all about Doomsday, but every single time he got hit by a punch or an explosion or a nuclear weapon, and he keeps growing, and I'm looking, I'm like, oh my god, what the hell is going on? Like, that to me was both terrifying and super cool. So and you know what, the reality is this, is that there's going to be 10 more of these movies from DC that are coming down the pike, and with all the mixed reviews and all the thumbs down that the critics and the pundits were talking about, this was a $250 million movie that was made, with an extra $150 million just to promote it, and it made $170 million just here in the United States, almost half a billion worldwide, so congratulations.
Yeah, it's on 30,000 screens, only 4,000 of them are in the United States.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Isn't it numbing, though? Like, I'm fine with it being serious. I'm fine with it being dark. The Chris Nolan movies are serious. They're dark. But he, as a writer and as a director, understands that even in a dark movie, you've got to break it up here and there with some moments that have some humor, some levity. They did it in this movie. They started to do it, you know, when Clark Kent is nailing Lois Lane in the bathtub and scenes like that, you know. Like, you've got to have some moments like that. That's a moment that brings you as a human being and as, you know, a moviegoer sort of back into it. You get into this 30-minute fight sequence between Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and what's his name?
Doomsday.
And it's just numbing. I mean, it's freaking numbing. Like, I'm literally, like, I'm just sort of watching the screen. My eyes are glazing over because it's just, like, throwing each other into a building, punching, throwing each other into another building, you know, lasso around the torso, and, like, whipping you over here, and then he's shooting you with the green fart bullet, and, you know, like...
And Lois Lane is drowning.
Lois Lane is drowning. Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, so numbing to me.
Well,
I want to ask, you know, what... How does super beings, I mean, what that can't
You're
be
right.
destroyed? I mean, what do they do? How do you make that?
That is a 100%
valid
point.
They're going to fight till someone's dead or the world is blown up, you know?
You're absolutely right. I have no answer to that. What should I expect? I go see a Batman versus Superman movie. I should expect that there will be just a knockdown, drag-out fight, in this case between four beings like that. And you're right. I don't know what the answer to that is. But I will tell you that watching it for 30 minutes is numbing to me. It doesn't make me want to see another one. It makes me want to go, you know what? Yeah, I've seen it.
And here's the question that I would pose to both of you, and that is this, is that, I mean, I know that they almost had, they had to, you know, you've got Civil War coming out in a month. You've got Infinity War happening in the next 2 years when it comes to the Avenger movies and all the Marvel comic movies and all that sort of thing. So DC was almost obligated to play catch-up with all of this moving forward. Does Batman really need to be in the same movie as Superman? I mean, you're talking about four beings fighting amongst each other, and they're beating the shit out of each other and throwing each other in the walls and all that sort of thing. But you're also saying... You're talking about three aliens
right. And
one man that just happens to be the world's greatest detective and all that sort of thing. Does he really need to be there?
Yes. Having said that, me as a non-comic book guy going into this thinking, how the fuck does Batman beat Superman? How the fuck does that happen? I gotta say, it kind of made it believable. Like, I was watching the movie going, I guess that could work. You hit him with the crypt.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about Superman that's always fucking sucked. It's like, how are they gonna get him this time? Oh, yeah.
Same way they always
are. What are we going to do? Oh, yeah. And I feel so dumb for leading up to this movie going, how the fuck is Batman going to beat Superman? Like, it never occurred to me that he's going to get himself some fucking kryptonite.
Well, once that workout montage started, you know.
Mantage!
It's a motherfucking mantage!
I was thinking the exact same thing. He's, like, beating the tires with the hammer. Yeah.
And he improved over time. That's what montages do.
And speaking of Superman, okay, is he fucking dead or not? Because we go through 20 minutes of the gun salutes and the slow-mo waving American flags.
Oh my god, and the fucking bagpipes. The goddamn bagpipes.
Fucking bagpipes.
Those were not traditional guns. Those were cannons.
Yeah,
those
cannon.
Were,
I was thinking to myself, where the fuck is this cannon fire landing? Where are they firing these?
No, they're just blanks. They're cannon blanks.
Very large blanks. So
is he fucking dead or not? Because after all of that, and then you start to see the dirt, like, you know, shifting around in this Inception-like moment on the coffin, and everyone knows that Superman is in Justice League, not the movie, but the comic book. I assume the movie, too.
Well, so the death of Superman comics, that series was, I think, in the 90s, early 90s, and when they decided to do that, there's a documentary about it. They decided to do that because
don't tell
basically,
me, Shaq.
No. They decided to do it because the Superman comics were dying. Nobody was buying them, so they're like, "Well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?"
Right.
I said, "Well, let's just kill Superman."
Right.
And they're like, "No, we can't do that." And they said, "No, we have to do that." Because traditionally Superman's mythology is very much the story of Moses, an orphan sitting in a basket down the river, taken up by foster parents, and then he grows up to lead his people to salvation, and that, that's the story of Moses, and that's very much kind of the story of Superman. But then in the 90s, they meshed it with the story of Jesus Christ, because he dies for all mankind and then is resurrected. And the resurrection, they had this series after he died. It was a short series called Reign of the Superman before they officially brought him back. I think it was just 1 year. And they had all these other Supermans come into play. There was like a clone Superboy. There was the Shaq Superman, the metal Superman. There was a cyborg Superman. There was another Superman who was like a scientist from outer space or something. And
yeah, I've seen the video. I've seen the YouTube video where a hardcore Superman fan was basically like saying, "Why did you guys do this when you were just going to bring him back anyway?" But anyway, that's besides the point. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing. That's the whole premise of this movie is Dawn of Justice. It's supposed to be a setup for the Justice League. This is an introduction to Batman, an introduction to Wonder Woman, vague introductions to some of the other characters. But it's an introduction to the Justice League. And Zack Snyder, as far as their storytelling is concerned, I read that he wanted Batman to bring together the Justice League. And I can't for the life of me remember if that's really how it happened or if Superman, I want to say it was Superman that put together the Justice League, but I could be very wrong. But Zack Snyder wanted Batman to be the one to put together the Justice League because he is the one human.
Right.
He is the one human who, in the beginning of this movie, has lost all faith in humanity. He and from what I gathered from the movie, now some of this is stuff I read before, but from what I gather, he hasn't been Batman for a little while. And then when Superman is introduced 18 months, before this movie starts, Batman comes back. And that's when Batman starts branding people. That's when Batman's darker. That's when Batman starts killing. That's when Batman becomes this jaded old man who has no faith in humanity, and by the end of the movie, Superman, who is not a human, restores his faith. And I don't think they do the best job in the world of kind of illustrating that arc, but that's what's meant to be there.
Okay. Let me ask you both of you guys this question, because it is a Batman versus Superman. Is this the best Superman movie you've ever seen?
I want to put it on par with Man of Steel.
Man of Steel is still your number one.
Yeah, I would say it's number one.
Okay, Chris,
I think it's my number one superhero movie, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Man of Steel is your number one superhero movie.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
Okay.
I love The Dark Knight right underneath it. But the Nolan movies didn't do that much for me. And part of that is I thought Nolan was too married to this idea of realism and, there's no metahumans in that world.
Right.
That wasn't in the Nolan verse at all.
Right.
And he made that very clear. This is not, that does not happen here. This is reality.
But in spite of that, Superman, your favorite Superman movie, the one that you think is end all be all number one is Man of Steel. Your number one Batman movie is The Dark Knight.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
Chris,
fair.
Chris, what about you?
Like I said before, I don't care that much for the Christopher Reeve movies. I know a lot of people grew up with them and love them, but I saw them later in life. I saw them in my 20s, so to me they are just sort of a footnote from the 70s and 80s.
Okay.
So I like Man of Steel.
Okay.
I guess your only other choice is, you know, something with fucking George Reeves or the one with Brandon Routh and Kevin Spacey. And I'm certainly not going to go that route. Like I said, I like Man of Steel. So for me, that was a good movie. That is a Superman movie. This didn't feel like a Superman movie to me. And I don't think it is supposed to be a Superman movie. I think it's supposed to be the Dawn of Justice. It literally is like a prequel to
Dawn of Justice.
The Justice League. Yeah. I mean, that is more what it feels like.
Your number one Batman movie.
I felt, if anything, I had to complain about this movie was that Superman's arc, his storyline, is that he just didn't have enough. There wasn't enough, screen time for him as Clark or Superman, in my opinion, where it was actually character development. It was just him, you know, kind of brooding and, you know, really just. I think the whole point of what we're supposed to see from Superman is this: is Superman is also losing faith. He's losing his faith in who he is and why he's here and if the world deserves it, and he's being just hammered by this media machine. He's being hammered by these politicians and these newspapers and everyone, and then he goes and he saves some lives and these people worship him. And so he's torn because he's just like,
I can't win for trying.
What is the point here? Yeah, why do I do this if I can't save everyone?
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. How come you didn't save the people in Mexico that weren't on the television screen when you were at the party, Superman and all that sort of thing? I get it.
No one stays good forever. That's what he says, right? Something like that.
So,
and then at the end, he has this moment where he looks at Lois and, you know, she says everything, and he has love, and he realizes he's a human at the same time as being this god, and he has to go, and he has to make the ultimate sacrifice, and then he does it, and it was just, it's not like the comics. People are going to be very disappointed. Doomsday is not like the comics, but I think cinematically, there wasn't really much, there couldn't have been a much better way to do it, and having him die at the end of this movie, I actually got spoiled 2 days ago, and I was looking at a stupid meme, and I was stupid enough to read the comments section, and it just said, Superman totally dies. And then another person said, yeah, Superman's dead. And that was it, and I was like, fuck.
And then Our Lady Peace started playing.
Yeah, you're wrong to look at the meme in the first place. Going into the comments was
icing on the cake.
I'm sorry, dude.
I think it was that hilarious Ben Affleck meme with the Hello Darkness song playing.
Oh, that was so funny.
It's so funny.
All three of us are sitting here. We got different opinions on the movie. We didn't like it so much. You did like it, but we all agree. Superman, not that much character development. Wonder Woman, not that much character development. Lex Luthor, not that much character development. So who are you left with? You left with Batman. Does it feel like a Batman movie? Not really. No. So you're left with this movie that feels like this hodgepodge. It tries to be so many different things. It tries to do so many different things that none of them really work. For me, obviously you felt differently. And I know other people that feel differently. Our friend Curtis loved the movie. Told me the other day about it. How much, I thought it was perfect. He's going off in detail about all this stuff that worked for him. So I got really excited thinking, hey, maybe I'm going to like this thing.
Yeah.
But I didn't. To answer your question earlier, I got to go with Batman Begins, only because it came first and sort of introduced us to that world. Like, Batman Begins, Dark Knight, both 10s for me. I just go with Batman Begins because it came first. And I like the origin story, you know. I think they really perfected the origin story. Plus, no other movie's done it better.
Plus, you know, obviously, you know, differing opinions and people have got different tastes and that sort of thing. I personally like the Nolan movies because they are in fact grounded in reality, because you could really see somebody becoming this vigilante crime fighter. You can also see somebody that just fucks mad shit up and decides to just buy hundreds of millions of dollars of stolen mob money and buys dynamite and gunpowder and gasoline and just blows up an entire city.
Exactly. I don't need them to be metahumans. They make it fantastic enough, whether it's Scarecrow with his hallucinogenic drug, or the Joker with his makeup and his anarchistic ways and all this kind of stuff, or Bane, you know, that whole storyline. That's enough for me. It doesn't need to be...
Yeah, and I guess kind of along the same lines, the struggle that Superman was facing in Man of Steel and in Batman versus Superman, where you know, like Daniel, like you were talking about, like I can't please these people. Like, I'm trying to save people, I get screwed over. I don't do this, or I'm not over here, I get screwed over. Humans are flawed enough.
Imagine Zack Snyder feels.
Yeah,
like
humans.
That.
Humans are fucked up enough as it is, and there's, you know, point taken where you don't need them to have superpowers because they're already clearly flawed and clearly have their own devices to, you know, screw or inspire the, you know, the entire human race and their fellow man and woman. But anyway.
Yeah, that's probably why he identifies with the Superman character. You're right. It's like, that's how Snyder feels. Like, how the fuck am I going to please these people? You know, like, yeah. I can't please everybody. I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't.
Yeah, here's another thing, too, that I wanted to kind of get into before we wrap up, because we're right at the hour mark. You were right. We were going to talk about this for a very long time. And here was one thing that did suck to me, and that was this, is that, you know, all the critics were watching the movie. They were getting the opportunity to see in the screener in order to write all the reviews and everything else. And it seemed like every single person, it turned into Mad Libs for crappy, awful, funny, quirky titles and, like, all the stuff that they were writing about. How
not as bad as Bush v. Gore, but close.
Right.
Yeah, like, who can be the funniest, cruelest asshole?
Yeah, and the not as bad as Bush versus Gore but close quote actually came from the Chicago Reader, because I have I have a couple of them pulled up, but you know, it's not the worst movie of all time. There are several other movies that I can think of off the top of my head that are shit and I've walked out of, and
yeah, it's
and
not bad, it's not a bad movie.
No.
I think we both agree about that.
Yeah and so here's just a couple for food for thought. The studio has, in the unusual way, begged and bullied critics not to reveal plot points, and I wouldn't dream of denying you the thrill of discovering just how overstuffed and preposterous a movie narrative can be. That was from the New York Times.
That was A.O. Scott, right?
Yes. Yep. And then there's also, with Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, the movie division of DC Entertainment and the parent studio Warner Brothers have given the fanboys and the Nolanoids what they crave, and lo, is it impressive, and lo, it is god-awful. That was from The Vulture. I don't know how you can have both, but anyway, that's...
Yeah, it's not god-awful. You know, it's just not. I like this, though. You know, I think it's funny to trash a movie if you didn't like it.
Yeah, and the last one from the AV Club, directed by Zack Snyder of faithfully butchered Watchmen fame, which I don't agree with.
I think love The Watchmen.
I do, too. Batman vs. Superman takes a title fight kids of all ages have been speculating about for decades. Costume Titan from the cosmos meets costume vigilante from the city and invests it all with the fun of a protracted custody battle. So,
to be fair, these little snippets are taken out of full reviews and put onto things like Rotten Tomatoes and things like that. They take those funny moments as sort of, you know, is representative of what the entire review is. How the entire review feels. Because Rotten Tomatoes essentially is a plus or minus kind of review. That's how they come up with their score. They look at the review. Is this review a plus or a minus? They take all those pluses or minuses. It's an aggregate site. And so if it's a minus review, they're going to take the quote from that review that most, you know, exemplifies that, you know.
Right. And you know, like, a perfect example is I read one that was actually really funny. I thought it was very funny. But
they're all funny.
Batman v. Superman is v. bad. That was from Deadspin. So
I like that.
But anyway, Daniel, we really appreciate you being on the show.
To
kind of give balance to us, because, you know, the last thing that we wanted to sound like was a bunch of, I mean, we are going to sound like a bunch of assholes anyway, but
no, I don't want to just sit here and trash a movie. Like, I didn't think it was that bad.
No,
like,
it's not that bad. Listen, again, we've got Batman fighting Superman in a very cool looking, like, the perfect example is that when I'm walking out of the movie theater with my friend and her husband and the kid who's 9 years old, and I asked him, hey kid, what'd you think of the movie? I thought it was awesome. Well, that's the only opinion that really matters, because now he's going to watch them all and buy all the toys and buy all the stuff. So.
And maybe that's, you know, like, maybe that's the best thing. Maybe that's who they're making it for. No offense, Daniel.
Well, I felt very much like they were making it for me too. You know, we character development aside, I don't have to be spoon-fed everything, and I just was visually entertained throughout the whole thing and moved to tears at one or two points, and the ending to me was just a beautiful way to do what the source material kind of lends itself to, and I'm looking forward to many, many more DC movies. Absolutely.
Good deal, man. Well, it was good talking with you, all right?
All right, guys.
Love you, buddy.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Character development's not so bad either, though.
Yeah. If they got a better screenplay in a better, more focused. I don't know. It just seemed like it was all over the place.
Yeah, that's a good point. The movie's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it feels like they didn't spend enough time doing what they needed to do. You right. know what I mean? Like, yeah. they dedicate 40 minutes to this giant fight at the end. They dedicated a little bit of time to Bruce Wayne. They dedicate almost no time to Superman. I guess that's because they feel like you saw the previous movie. Okay, fine.
Right.
They dedicate very little time to Lex Luthor, so you don't understand the sort of driving force of the movie. And they also dedicate no time to this Wonder Woman character, who's supposed to be like this key character in the third act. So
yeah.
they have all this time, all this energy, and they don't put it in the right places, as far as I'm concerned. As he said, is it visually entertaining for 2.5 hours? Yes, it is. If that's all you're looking for, and if you're not a comic book fan and you're not 9 years old, then all you can hope for from this movie is visually entertaining for 2.5 hours. Because yeah. you're not going to get anything else. That's it.
Yeah.
You'll never think about it again. You'll probably not want to see it again. But you will be visually entertained for 2.5 hours.
Well, yes. Jesus Christ, Chris, what the hell do we know? It literally made almost $200 million this past weekend.
I know, but I can be visually entertained at Mons Venus for probably the same amount of money if I go through, you know, some Tampa magazine and get a coupon so I can right. get in for a discount price, and then I spend no money while I'm in there.
Right.
I can probably spend the same $12.
Right.
If you go see it in IMAX, you might be pushing towards lap dance territory.
Right. Oh, and Mons Venus, by the way, is an awesome strip club.
They know that.
Yeah.
They
okay.
know that.
They do that? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that's
Trust
good.
Me, they know that.
So, last couple things that we can talk about. We really need to pick a podcast title for this
yeah.
damn thing.
Yeah, we got to come up with a name.
Do you have any ideas as far as what we should name it? Because what I literally did was I Googled Untitled Movie Podcast just because I was curious. Oh, you can find it on morelikeradio.com, and we just did the podcast and
right.
blah, blah, blah. There are other ones that are called Untitled Movie Podcast.
Ooh, that's bad.
That is very, very bad. So
no, I don't have any ideas. You know, I've thought of like silly like movie pun titles, but... You know, like, yeah, do we want to be married to some silly movie pun title forever? I don't know. Maybe we do. Maybe if it's a really good one. I don't know, though. Nothing's coming to my mind.
Yeah, Podfather?
Podfather. Yeah, nah, the Podfather.
No, I don't want to do that.
I know. That's how I feel about it, too, and I'm the one that came up with it.
Okay. One that I was slightly interested, Hot Fuzz?
Hot Fuzz? But that's just the title of a movie.
I know. Well, I was reaching.
Let's call it The Shawshank Redemption.
let's call it the Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Welcome to our podcast, The Breakfast Club.
And the other one that the other idea that I had was Line, because it's the name of our movie group on Facebook.
Line. It's kind of indistinct, though.
Line? Yeah. So we still need to think of something, though.
We do.
The last thing that I wanted to talk about with you, and I'm not as big of a fan as I probably should be, but I know that you certainly are. I definitely know that you are. Gary Shanley passed away this past week.
Yeah.
Died of... Well, now I heard that apparently his doctor was refusing to sign the death certificate, and now there's going to be some sort of investigation as to how he died, because it was very, very sudden, and he died at age 66, and... he was literally hanging out with, you know, his comic friends, you know, earlier in the month and all that sort of thing. But
yeah.
Gary Shandling, obviously, was a heavy influence on comedy and present comics and present shows. And I wanted to find out your thoughts in regards to the legacy that he left.
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan. I'm not, like, the super fan like, you know, some of these other people are. I never saw the... It's the Gary Shandling Show or whatever it was from the 80s, but I certainly saw the Larry Sanders Show
right.
In the 90s, and I thought it was brilliant. It is the type of show like Arrested Development or something like that, or Seinfeld or something like that, that you can watch again and again and again and again from beginning to end, soup to nuts, year after year. You know, you can go back to it and watch it again.
Gotcha.
And that was all him. You know, I mean, he was just comedic genius. Yeah, it's sad. It's a loss because... He's not somebody that you saw a lot in recent years, but even as recently as 2000-ish, he made that movie, What Planet Are You From?
Yes.
Which is like a movie that sort of came and went and nobody saw it, but if you're a fan of Gary Shandling and you saw that movie, like, it's a fucking funny movie, man. Like,
yeah.
It's really, really hilarious, and I love it. And I liked him very much. It's a shame we'll never get to see him again. It's a sad story. I hope that there's not... too much drama surrounding it. I hope that somebody signs a death certificate or whatever, because that's silly. You know, I mean, people die. Like, you're hanging out with your buddies 1 second, and then you have a heart attack. You never know. Yeah, like that, you're dead. So
yeah.
It's a shame. Like, we've lost a lot of good ones recently, and, yeah, he will be missed.
And, you know, I know that you had mentioned that movie that he starred in the early 2000s, but he was actually in a movie fairly recently.
Yeah, what was that?
Hail Hydra. He was in...
That's right.
He was in the Marvel movies.
That's right. Well, he wasn't in, like, true Gary Shandling form, though. You gotta wonder, though, like, how did that happen?
I don't know. I kind of want to know the backstory on how he sold himself to the studio heads at Marvel Studios.
Or did they come to him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's one way or the other. Like, he's probably not the kind of guy that's going in auditioning for stuff like that.
Right.
Like, they probably were like, who are we going to get for this, you know? Like, and then they come up with Gary Shandling somehow.
Yeah, because he was in the Iron Man movies.
Yes, and he even did the little, like, lean in and whisper Hail Hydra at one point, too, right? Like,
yeah,
he wasn't
just
in that, like, group. Like, he was, like, the guy that delivered the line. Yeah, it's super sad. You know, anytime somebody dies, they have these movie polls, you know, like, who's going to die next? Like, and he's got to be way down there. He's 66 years old. He's not, you know, he's not somebody to think of. You know, that's going to be croaking anytime soon.
Yeah, he was also in Zoolander.
He was in Zoolander. He was in the walk, right? The walk off.
That's right.
Him?
That's yeah. right.
He was one of the celebrities that you have to get by, along with Limp Bizkit guy. What the hell's his name?
Fred Durst.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he was in Iron Man 2, and he was in The Dictator. I didn't see that movie, but I know that you did.
I don't remember him in The Dictator, and I love that movie.
He was the health inspector.
The health inspector. God, I don't remember that part. It's been a couple of years since I saw it, but...
But he was also in Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, Winter Soldier, of course. Yeah, that's where he delivered his Hail Hydra line.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, geez, what can you say? Like, hope it was quick, hope it was painless, and I'm going to have to watch the Larry Sanders Show again. I don't even know if that's on DVD or if it's on HBO Go.
I can find it for you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll find
it
for
you. Oh, yeah, you can.
I'll find something
for you.
There's
like 90 episodes or something like that.
Yeah, so. I know. But do you have anything that you would like to talk about? Because we are at 1:11.
No, that's it. I just wanted to talk about the movie. What's coming out this week?
It's coming out this week. Let's find
anything
out.
Anything good? I did see Zootopia. Took my kids to see Zootopia.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
It was really funny, man. I gotta tell you, the movie's got like a 90% rating on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. Disney's kind of killing it here recently, you know, between this and Frozen, you know? Pixar gets a lot of
love. With this and Frozen and Star Wars now, because they've got all that going
on.
Yeah,
of course, yeah. For that matter, you could say all the Marvel movies are Disney. And Indiana Jones, too. But I'm just talking about, like, in the animated world, they'd sort of fallen off, it felt like, and Pixar took over, and then it was like, oh, maybe DreamWorks is going to take over. And the last couple Pixar movies, Inside Out aside, you know, they're making Monsters University sequels, and they're making Cars sequels, now they're making a Finding Nemo sequel.
Right.
And it just felt like sort of they were falling off. Disney makes Frozen, and Zootopia is very funny. It's a movie that you can see without kids and probably enjoy. Like, really well-written, you know, script, very funny, enjoyable movie.
Okay. The popular movies that are going to be coming out next month include the live-action Jungle Book, which I did see a preview of before, Batman vs. Superman.
I'll be taking the kids to that.
The Huntsman, Winter's...
Who cares?
I don't care.
Who gives a shit? I saw a preview for that. Did you ever see the original?
Yes.
100% forgettable.
Well, I'm not going to watch it again, so if that's what you're talking about, then yeah.
That is what I'm talking about.
I mean,
you want to see it again.
Yeah. No, I know more about the backstory about how Kristen Stewart was sleeping with the director while... The filming of the movie is going on.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Then the divorce ended up happening after the fact. Yeah, I know more about that than the actual movie itself.
I heard people, like, when the trailer came on and they show the, you know, the characters that are returning, I heard people in the theater like, yes! Like, sort of like, people must be into this thing. It must have made money, they must have made a sequel. I know that Frank Darabont of the aforementioned Shawshank Redemption, title of our show, he was originally attached to direct this piece of shit sequel. I say piece of shit, I shouldn't shit on it, I have not seen it, it might be awesome. But I have no interest in seeing it. He was originally attached to direct.
Hardcore Henry, which is that first-person action movie that is... I don't know.
That's one of those, if the previews come out or the reviews come out and say, oh my god, it's awesome, I could be talked into going to see it.
I'm pretty sure that I've already seen all the things that I want to see from the trailer, though, because...
Yeah. It feels like it would get old after 2 hours.
I'd rather play the game than actually watch the movie.
Yeah, but who knows? You know, like when originally like found footage type movies started coming out, we're like, Oh, yeah, seen it. How it, and they came up with all of these original ways to make that concept work, you know? So maybe somebody can make this concept work in a way that's actually interesting.
New Barbershop movie, The Next Cut. New Melissa McCarthy movie, The Boss. That's also coming out. And then...
lots of groans during the Ghostbuster preview when I saw Batman versus Superman, I gotta tell
really?
You. Really? Like, audible groans.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, like that. Like, oof.
You know, I...
air getting sucked out of the room.
You know, you were talking about how Warcraft was going to be the potential bomb of this summer.
Possibly.
I think I'm probably gonna lean towards Ghostbusters.
No way! Ghostbusters makes money, I guarantee it.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, with all the groans that you're talking about.
But you heard me groan, didn't you? You got the name recognition of Ghostbusters, and I know like millions and millions of people play Warcraft, but Ghostbusters also has the name recognition of Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, and some of the other stars that I'll bet you we will see cameos of in upcoming previews and sneak peeks and teasers to previews to trailers and stuff like that.
Okay.
But World of Warcraft, it's got nobody you've ever heard of in it. Like, literally, like, it's a bunch of actors that the general public is not familiar with in any way, shape, or form.
Fair enough.
But and Ghostbusters will make money, I guarantee it.
And the final major release that is coming out in April is Keanu with Key and Peele.
Yeah, hell yeah. Key and Peele.
I will definitely watch that.
No doubt. Yeah, I'll be seeing that.
Yeah. So
in the aforementioned vacation movie also.
Oh, that's right. Oh crap. Well, you know what? We're gonna
we're gonna shelve it.
We'll save that for next time. We've got a bunch of other topics that we'll get to. This is still called
For now,
the Untitled Movie Podcast.
Or Shawshank Redemption.
Or Shawshank Redemption, which you can always listen to on More Like Radio. You are Chris Wetton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you all soon. Thank you. Pull through.